cricket, lovely cricket. Welcome along to 98 Not Out, Phoenix FM's weekly cricket magazine show, live and direct from Phoenix FM Towers in miserable Brentwood this evening. Just realised it's our last show of 2023, and what a year it's been. So on tonight's show, we head out to sunny Barbados to talk to Roland Butcher, who is upbeat about West Indies cricket after their white ball success over England. And he says that he was touched by a gesture made to him by the England team. More of that in a little while. I'm also joined in the studio by Essex superfan Dan Hagger. We'll be talking all things Essex cricket, and there's a lot to talk about on that front. Regular listeners will recognise Dan's name because he does tune in every week, so it's really good to have him in at the studio tonight. And I thank him for journeying down from Ipswich via Felixstowe. All the usual features, cricket going on all over the place at the moment. Bit of news and music tonight from, amongst others, the Pet Shop Boys. As always, you can listen to Phoenix on the FM dial. Just head to 98 if you're in the central Essex area. Michael Olin. Via the internet, phoenixfm.com, click on Listen Live. Or if you've got a smart speaker, just shout at your smart speaker to play Phoenix FM. And you can listen to us anywhere in the world. And if you've got things to do, don't forget you can download the show. It'll be available on the Phoenix FM website a bit later on. phoenixfm.com, look under programs, look for 98 Not Out. And we'll be there. And also, if you're a social media fanatic, 98 Not Out is on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just search for 98 Not Out. And a reminder, we don't do TikTok. Right, as always, lots of stuff to get into. Oh, I should also mention that we are up for Cricket Podcast of the Year. Look on our socials for the link. We need you all to vote and support us. We are up against some proper heavyweights from the media world. We would love to give them a bloody nose. So look for 98 Not Out on whatever social media you use. I've put the link on there. Very easy. Just click on it and vote for 98 Not Out. You've got about another month to go, but we don't want to be slacking on this one. So remember, vote for your favourite cricket show for the podcast of the year. And we're going to be in the sports pod. We've been shortlisted for the final of sports podcast of the year. But meantime, it's cricket birthdays of the week. And we'll start with the biggest name in English and Essex cricket. Sir Alastair Cook turned 39 on Christmas Day. And he shares that date with Marcus Trescothick. Annie Chave's favourite player. He's a bit older. He's 48. Simon Jones, one of the heroes of the 2005 Ashes series, is 45. Rowan Kanhai, 88, still going strong, and was a big feature of county cricket back in the day. Aussie player Matty Wade, 36. From the West Indies, Shimron Hetmyer, 27. England's Heather Knight, 33. West Indies' Evan Lewis, 32. David Boone, he of that famous moustache, 63. Saqlain Mushtaq, 47. Travis Head, 30. Brad Hodge, 49. Joe Root, 33. Umpire Joel Wilson, 57. Carl Jameson, 29. and Phoenix FM's very own Father Christmas, Mr. Andy Gilson, 61. Although, as he said when I texted my best wishes, he said it's 16 reversed. I'm not quite sure what that means. You're 61 and you know it. And also to our listeners, Richard Craddock and Kieran Bushnell, who are celebrating birthdays this week. Remember, if you have a birthday coming up or someone you know has got a birthday coming up, get in touch. You can reach out via email, radio@phoenixfm.com. Just type your mail, 19 and out, brackets, birthdays, and just tell me whose birthday it is. If you want a little bit about them and definitely how old they are, because we love to embarrass people on air. Or you can use the social messenger media, so the social media messaging functions, and that will come through. And I will read them out on air.
Phoenix FM.
Right, first of all, some of you might have spotted me getting into a bit of a Twitter or X pylon last Saturday, when I noted Rebecca Welsh becoming the first woman to officiate a Premier League game as Fulham hosted Burnley. And I asked the question, when will we see the like in cricket? Now, the like, and I've used my words very carefully, meaning that when will we see a woman officiating in cricket at the highest level, namely being in the middle for a men's test match? But some people were very quick, as seems to be the case these days with social media, some people were very quick to take offence, pointing out this has already happened, providing a list of T20 and county games where women, notably Sue Redfern, have officiated, but missing the point I was making about there being no reason we can't have a woman out in the middle in a men's test match. I was actually being supportive, but a few people chose to miss the point and jump on me, some of them quite aggressively. Others, thankfully, saw the point I was making and agree with me. Now, I have no problem with open discussion on social media, but I have no time for aggression, and in the case of women's cricket chat, downright rudeness. Twitter account is run by two ladies that are high profile in the world of women's cricket, and I think that they really should know better. They have since retracted and edited their posts on the subject, maybe realising the error of their ways. But no apology to me from the perpetrators. Regular listeners will know I have a solid history of supporting and promoting women's cricket, and enjoy a good relationship with other fine podcasts and social media posters from around the cricketing family. This is the first time I've experienced such poor behaviour, rudeness and a lack of respect. So I have blocked and unfollowed them. Women's Cricket Chat. Other podcasts are available.
Community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Right, let's have a little bit of music to lighten the mood. This is from the soundtrack to Saturday Night Fever. And this is... you may remember it. A Fifth of Beethoven.
across Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
And that was Walter Murphy, a fifth of Beethoven, taken from the soundtrack to Saturday Night Fever, which I remember getting given as a Christmas present. Oh, God, how many years ago was that? But still, I was listening to it recently. What a great album. So many good tracks on there. Of course, there's the Bee Gees, but there's a lot of other great stuff on there, such as that track. And also, Yvonne Elliman is another one that I'd forgotten was part of that film. Saturday Night Fever, the soundtrack. Go and get yourself a copy with all those vouchers you've been given for Christmas from people that didn't know what to get you. Right, it's a miserable, rainy, windy night out there. Let's get ourselves a little bit of sunshine. On Christmas Eve, I managed to catch up with Roland Butcher out in sunny Barbados, and we had a good chat about his days playing for Middlesex in England, but also just the current state of West Indies cricket. We head over to sunny Barbados, where I'm joined by Roland Butcher, who's been on the show a few times now, and it's always very welcome to have him on the show. There's a few things I'd like to talk about. Roland, welcome to the show, and of course, Merry Christmas to you, sir.
Thank you, Darren, and Merry Christmas to you and your family, and hope you have a very, very enjoyable time over this weekend.
Yeah, it's a special time in Barbados. I've been out there for the festive season before, and there's a lot of traditions that go on of tidying up your house. And is it true that you paint the stones in front of your in the chattel houses, they paint the stones white so it looks like snow? Is that true?
Well, some people do that. Barbados is called Little England, so you can understand the traditions that goes back. So very much what goes on in UK in terms of celebration of Christmas goes on in Barbados. And that's the way it's always been, and I'm sure it'll continue being that way.
Yeah, that's right. It's very good. It's very good. So it's a good time for the West Indies. England have just finished their white ball tour to the region, and we've seen some ODI games, and we've seen some T20s with West Indies coming out on top. It must be a really good, positive message for West Indies cricket to beat England in both formats.
Yeah, it was obviously, I think, very good performance by the team, not just in these two series. I think overall, if you look at the progression made by all the teams this year, you'll find that West Indies have won five series this year. I can't remember, even in the heydays, when that has ever happened, where five series have been won in one year. So really, that just shows you how well the team has been playing and the progress that has been made. And really, it should be an indication of the future that lies ahead for, you know, this particular group of players.
That's right. I mean, England came into this as, recent world champions at 50-over cricket and current world champions at T20. But also, you're right, West Indies have done well this year. I was out in Bridgetown to watch them against India a few months ago. They pulled off some strong performances against a strong Indian team with Virat Kohli and the like that were out there.
Well, yeah, I think if you look at the year as a whole, started off being in a test series in Zimbabwe, you know, won a T20 series in South Africa, drew the ODI series, you know, beat India in the T20, obviously winning against England, both ODI and T20, you know, and if you add to that also the performances of the A-team, who won a series in Bangladesh, you can see that there's been, you know, real good progress made by the players. And, you know, we're very, very proud and pleased that sort of run has been put together. It's been a long, long time where people have been worrying around the world, what is the fate of West Indies cricket? But I think this last year really has been an exciting one. And the team has done very well.
Yeah, it was a big disappointment that they didn't feature in the World Cup in India. I kind of feel it's not really a World Cup without West Indies being there. What were the reasons for that?
Well, I think the reasons are much more, there were longer term reasons. As you know, West Indies have been going through a rough patch for a long time. It wasn't just during the World Cup qualifying. And you know, that sometimes you have to hit rock bottom, you know, before you can start looking upwards. And that probably was a seminal moment for the team and for the region, that really it couldn't get any worse. I am so pleased with the response of the players and everyone else involved since then. Has shown that there's a lot of pride in playing cricket for West Indies, and you know, the fact that yes, they can compete with the best in the world, because you know, they have beaten the top three teams in the world over this year in the series. So you know, that's not a bad response for the disappointment of missing out on that World Cup.
Yeah, and it's Australia next. That's going to be another challenge for them, but I'm guessing the guys are going into that with high hopes.
Yeah, I mean, the Test series is going to be a challenge. You can understand, because quite a number of West Indian players are not available for that series. So it gives the opportunity to a lot of younger players who have been cutting their teeth over the last year in the A-team, and they've done relatively well. So I would expect them also to give account of themselves in Australia. They will not be... You know, they'll know for sure the challenge that awaits them, because, you know, Australia is a formidable opponent. You know, the team brimming with confidence. So, you know, the Test series is likely to be a hard one. I'm much more confident in the white ball series, because I certainly believe that they can beat Australia in the white ball series.
Yeah, and I keep hearing people trying to tell me that cricket is dying in the West Indies, but I don't think it's really the case. Every time I'm in Barbados and I wander past Pickwick or Maple or any of the other clubs, there's always a high standard of cricket going on, and particularly with the Red Bull. I don't see the interest is dying at any stage.
You're absolutely right. The interest is not dying. You know, in actual fact, there's probably more cricket played now than ever before. I just think really some of the problems that we have had over the years is that, you know, first-class cricket in the Caribbean is a very short season, sometimes five matches. That's not great preparation to play the best in the world, particularly at Test match cricket. So that's one of the problems that we've had over the years, just getting enough cricket for our players, which means that at Test level, you know, they're having to learn on the job instead of coming into a Test with lots of first-class matches behind them. So, you know, I think what has happened, you know, over this last year is that, you know, the A team have had two tours this year alone, which has been fantastic for them. We've also now got an academy under 23 squad as well. They have just completed a series against Ireland Academy in the Caribbean. And also the under 19 have been, you know, pretty busy as well. And they're going to the World Cup in January. So what is happening now is that, you know, we're looking to obviously get more cricket for these players. The academy team also plays in the 50 over Super 50 tournament, and they will also play in the 4-day tournament, so that will be more experience for them. So if you continue on that path, you know, the Sydney cricket will be in good hands.
And for our younger viewers and listeners that are tuning into this interview, they may not be aware that Mr. Roland Butcher was the first black man to play cricket for England, back in, what was it, 81, was it?
80 and 81.
80 and 81, that's right. And I saw that there was a really lovely moment just recently with you in the England dressing room, and it was a small presentation for you.
Yeah, that was very touching. It's a great honour. Totally unexpected. Obviously, England would have planned it before they left the UK, because, you know, they invited me to the dressing room, assembled all the players, and then made a presentation to me with a Three Lions pin with my ODI and Test number engraved at the back. And also they've got Phil Salt, who is very much a Barbadian, to do the presentation as well. So that was a nice touch. And yeah, I would really like to, you know, thank Mark Saxby, really, and the rest of the management and the team, you know, for doing that and for the reception that I got in Trinidad last week. And yeah, very, very proud of that moment. And I'd like to thank the England team for the gesture.
Yeah, it was. I remember those days really well as a youngster, and that Middlesex team that you were part of, with Norman Cairns and Will Slack. It was a really joyous time for West Indian representation in the English game.
It was, certainly the 80s and 90s was pretty much the height of persons playing county cricket of West Indian heritage. As you said, within the Middlesex side, obviously we had five players with Caribbean roots. Most of the other teams also had players as well. Some were seasoned internationals, obviously like Somerset with Garner and Richards, Sylvester Clark at Surrey. Lancashire had like Lloyd, and Michael Holden, Colin Croft, Derbyshire, Lawrence Rewer, Hampshire, Marshall, Greenwich. So you could go through all the counties and you would find a good flavour of West Indian heritage. Obviously, from mid-90s, really, that has changed somewhat. But I think what is happening right now in England, particularly with the YES programme, you will see in the future, you will see a lot more West Indian heritage players back in first-class cricket because the interest is there. Now what they're getting is the opportunity to compete for places. And, the love for cricket will never die for West Indian, that's for sure.
Yeah, the ACE programme is a fantastic initiative. As you know, I'm heavily involved with that, and my son plays for the academy. It's great to be amongst all the guys there, and Chevy Green and Ebony Rainford-Brent are doing some fantastic work. And I know you're a big supporter and ambassador as well for the project. It's a really, really good thing, and I think it will be bearing fruit pretty soon.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm certain that will happen. It was nice to see Ebony again. She was here for the matches in Barbados, so we caught up. It was nice to see her again. She and the team really working hard, spreading its wings really around the UK now. And you're right, in the future, you will see that the work that's being done will bear fruit.
Now, there's one news story that I read this week that's concerning me a little bit. I'd be keen to hear your thoughts on, and that's the news about the Jamaican Talawas withdrawing from the CPL. And there are stories about cricket in Jamaica struggling. They aren't going to have any matches for the upcoming World Cup are going to be held there. And the article that I read said that there's no interest in cricket in Jamaica, which I find amazing given the number of fantastic players that have come from Jamaica down the years. Are things really that bad in the area?
Actually, not being on the ground in Jamaica, I, like yourself, have to listen to what other people say without really having the facts. I do think that they have got some problems in Jamaica in relation to cricket. I don't think they've bidded for a lot of tournaments. I guess they've had difficulty in having the Talawas based in Jamaica. And as a result, the Talawas have had to use other bases, like at one stage, USA and other places, to be. So it doesn't surprise me that the Talawas will be moving elsewhere. I think that's something that everyone can see coming. In terms of cricket on the ground, I would imagine there still is a great love of the game. There's some players certainly coming through from Jamaica. You've only got to look as far as Jordan Johnson, who's an under-19 player. He would be playing in the under-19 World Cup. Recently, West Indies toured Bangladesh under-19. He scored 300s in that tournament. He has played Super 50 recently for the combined campuses and colleges. And, we also sent him on the 18th tour to South Africa to give him that sort of experience. So, that sort of quality still exists. And, obviously they've got lots of fast bowlers as well. So, I cannot really say what exactly is going on in Jamaica. But, I think Jamaica has a very important role to play in the overall development of West Indies cricket. And I'm sure at some stage, they'll get it together. But the Talawas situation, I think that's been on the cards for quite a while.
So as we come through Christmas into 2024, all eyes are going to be on the T20 World Cup, which is being held in the West Indies and the USA. The USA being involved in a major tournament for the first time. I can remember the enthusiasm and the interest when the 50-over World Cup was held in West Indies in 2007. I think we're going to find similar levels because T20 cricket is really popular out in the Caribbean. It's going to be a great event.
Yeah, well, really, T20 cricket, as you know, now, it's really taken over and taken on around the world, really. It's watched by a lot of people. It is the cricket that a lot of players also want to play now. So to play in a World Cup T20 is something also very special. So the players will be looking forward to it. I mean, the supporters in the Caribbean will be looking forward to it. And as well as their love for the game, I think they really will start to believe now that they've got a team that can challenge for winning that trophy as well. So that will also add to the excitement.
And when you go into the rum shops around Barbados and you talk to some of the old guys in there, and my favourite is the John Moore Bar on the West Coast. And you always get involved in some good exchanges with some of the experts that are in there with the Mount Gay rum.
But Darren, you are a visitor and you do more than I do. You visit these rum shops, which unfortunately I don't do, not being a drinker. So I have to listen to exactly what you were saying to me and take it on board.
I just got it for research. I don't involve any bad habits, don't worry. But I love getting involved. You can get any Bajan on the subject of cricket, and it's always a fantastic conversation.
You don't have to start the conversation. I mean, they will start it, and invariably it is about cricket. Usually it's about giving the selectors a lot of stick, but that is besides the point. But Barbadians are no different to the rest of the Caribbean. You know, as selectors, you know, we do take a bit of a hammering. You know, whichever team you select is not the right one, but, that's the way it is. And they will always have their opinions. And that's what it is, their opinions.
Yeah, that's right. My late father was Guyanese, and he was no different. He had his views. And usually, as you're right, it was the selectors and the board that got all the fiercest criticism. Okay, Roland, great to talk to you, and many thanks again for joining us as always. It's always an absolute pleasure, and I'm glad to see you looking so well. Have a fantastic festive season. Enjoy Christmas, and I wish you all the best for 2024. And look forward to catching up in Barbados when I'm over next time.
Yeah, thanks, Darren, and happy Christmas to you and your family. And certainly looking forward to 2024.
Excellent. Roland Butcher speaking to us from Barbados. Many thanks.
Community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Hi, it's David Gower, president of the Lord's Taverners. Why don't you have a go at our Christmas quiz? For a couple of quid, you'll be helping us continue to help all the young people we support.
The Christmas issue of the Cricketer magazine, otherwise known as the January issue, is out now. We have a fantastic illustrated cover by the gifted Nick Newman. And inside, David Gower takes new MCC president Mark Nicholas to lunch. We have Mike Brearley talking about captaincy at the World Cup. And Simon Barnes reviews the cricketing year. If that isn't enough, we have a test match special with the producer Adam Mountford and the former producer Peter Baxter. We also have an interview with Kevin Howes. And Nasser Hussain picks his player of 2023 and is one to watch next year. And the icing on the cake is an interview with Fergal Sharkey, the pop superstar, on why his good heart belongs to the Ireland team. Subscribe to The Cricketer at cricketer.com.
Every Wednesday at 8 p.m. here on Phoenix FM, join me, Nick Field, for a round of curveballs, showcasing the many stars and faces of the local Essex scene and scenes from around the world. With guest interviews, live sessions, local gig news, and musically, everything from crooning folk metal to hip-hop punk tronica, and everything in between, whatever that might consist of. That's Curveballs, every Wednesday between 8 and 10 p.m. here on Phoenix FM. Tune in and see what you can discover.
Hi, my name's Rob Harvey, and if you can join us on a Tuesday evening for Synth City, it starts at 8 p.m. We have the very best in electronic synth pop electrica in the show. That's Tuesdays, 8 p.m. for Synth City on Phoenix 98 FM.
I'm John Chubb. Join me every Thursday night from 7 till 8pm for the Non-League Hour. All the latest results and fixtures involving non-league football teams from steps 1 to 6 across Essex and East London. Reports, interviews and your musical break. That's the Non-League Hour, only here on Phoenix 98 FM.
And I can confirm that John Chubb has risen Lazarus-like from his sickbed to be back in the chair. He follows me at 7 o'clock with the excellent Non-League Hour. And also make sure you catch him every Saturday between 3 and 6 for Phoenix Sport. Brilliant stuff. He was ill last week, but he's better now, I am told. And my thanks to Roland Butcher for that interview. Really good stuff. Really enjoyed that. And good of him to give up his time over Christmas to chat to us. I'm sure we'll be hearing from him again in the near future. Okay, back to some news. Now, today there's been, we were talking about Twitter spats earlier on. Ben Stokes has hit back at Steve Harmson's criticism of England's test preparation for the forthcoming tour of India. Harmson believes arriving just 3 days before the start of the first test is a recipe for disaster. Stokes has hit back saying, good job we're going to Abu Dhabi for a week-long training camp before we go to India for even more training then, isn't it? Stokes is racing to be fully fit, however, after surgery on his left knee in November, but is still not expected to feature as a bowler. For my part, I'm not sure that a week in Abu Dhabi is getting you fully prepared for the rigours of a test series against India. So I'm not sure if Ben Stokes' response is probably valid. And we do remember what happened at the World Cup, where England looked woefully underprepared and not ready for the conditions. The heat in India, I would suggest, is completely different to the heat in Abu Dhabi. But nonetheless, we wish England all the best. But if things start going wrong, then the criticism won't be far away. Now, staying with India, India secured their first test win over Australia with an eight-wicket victory in a one-off women's test match in Mumbai. Australia began the final day with 5 second innings wickets in hand and a lead of 46, but India ruthlessly dismissed the tourists for 261. India then chased down a modest target of 75 shortly after lunch, thanks to Smriti Mandhana's unbeaten 38. It's a reward for all the hard work we've done for so many years, said India skipper Harmanpreet Kaur. It's a reward for the hard work and the patience. We just want to play positive cricket. India's win is the first in 11 women's tests against Australia, who are ranked number one in the world in that format. And it's the first since the sides first played back in 1977. Australia and India now play each other in three ODIs and three T20s, which got underway today, I believe. Also today, I don't know if you're watching, there's a lot of you sat at home off work at the moment, and there was an absolutely fantastic feast of Test match cricket down in South Africa, where South Africa have beaten India in the first test at Centurion by an innings and 32 runs. Dean Elgar hit 185 as his team built up an impressive 163-run lead against the visitors and ended up securing the victory. In fact, it was well timed because no longer had they come off the pitch celebrating the win than heavens opened, and it was a proper downpour. Yes, all over in 3 days. Make of that what you will, but it was still great to see a bit of live test match cricket. And another interesting thing today, Australia, the MCG Boxing Day test is underway. Australia are playing Pakistan. Play was delayed at the MCG when third umpire Richard Illingworth got stuck in a lift. What an unusual thing. I don't think I've ever seen that before. I've seen many things, dogs and cats on the pitch, but never someone stuck in a lift, let alone the umpire. There you go. Right, my studio guest this evening is a good mate of mine, and it was high time we had him on, so he's made the journey down from Ipswich. Come down the A12 in the wind and the rain. It's a big 98 night. Welcome to Dan Hagger. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Darren. Thank you for having me on as well. And good evening to everyone.
Lots to talk about. I'm quite interested in this Dean Elgar story. So he's stepping away from international cricket. And he looks like he's going out on a flourish with that 185 in the first test down at Centurion. And on commentary, the local commentators announced that he was off to Somerset, but the rumour mill might suggest otherwise.
Yes, I believe an inexperienced commentator who was updating a certain website jumped on this and immediately said, "Oh, you know, so he's off to Somerset." Well, we shall wait to see. We'll wait to see the what the cookie crumbles, has to say. But the thing is, we know Essex. That we know they've got something like, and they're pretty sure about it. They've been fairly confident for a few months now.
That's right. They have said, haven't they?
Without saying who, or possibly even hinting on if it's an overseas player or not. But the thing is, I was actually reading today that Dean Elgar, although it's his last series, because their captain Temba Bavuma was injured and didn't come out to bat, that Dean Elgar may be asked to captain the rest of the series in his last series.
Oh, right. OK.
So, which will be an interesting thing for him. 185 off 287 in the test match there this week.
Yeah.
But I'd like to think... a certain overseas player for Essex would have hopefully encouraged him to come and play for it. Because, and if it does happen... That will be a straight swap for Alistair Cook.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I asked the question at the AGM about were there any plans for a replacement for Alistair Cook, and Chairman John Stevenson was pretty tight-lipped, as you'd imagine, and just said there'd be some news on a replacement in the new year, and he said it would be big news. Regardless of where he ends up, if I was Somerset, I'd be pretty annoyed. I mean, if it is the case that Dean Elgar's going to Somerset, I'd be a bit annoyed that it's getting announced on...
I'll be certainly saying something, but I think I think the possible conception is they may well need a bowler they're going to use their overseas quota as a bowler. They've already signed Will Sutherland as well, so they've got one place already taken up. So, I think that's just the best thing. Well, we just wait and see until it gets properly announced.
Well, that's it. And, let's just calm all of our enthusiasm a little bit. And but this is a great series to watch, though. I mean, you know, we're starved so much of proper Test cricket. And Test cricket always in South Africa is always well worth watching. And it was proper Test cricket. I've been watching this from ball number one. And it was just proper cricket. It wasn't Baz ball. It wasn't T20 crashing it and whatever else. And it was just great to see how the game was ebbing and flowing with the conditions. Now, South Africa racked up their innings with the sun shining. It wasn't overly, it was about 25 degrees, but it was blue skies, perfect for batting. And then when it was their turn to bowl in India's second innings, along came the clouds, the ball started doing a bit, the pitch was nipping and bouncing. It was quite interesting bounce in the pitch as well.
Yep.
And it was great, and that's what we love about Test cricket is, you know, it's the ebb and flow of the game, and you know there's no need to rush it, and there's a totally different technique. Dean Elgar, I thought, you know, really gave a good example of how to bat Test cricket in his innings.
Well, I mean, even in county cricket, the wins in T20 and the short formats are great, but the players will always say the most hard-earned ones are the hard-earned ones when you win on the last session of the last day of a four-day or of a test match are the most ones they savour. And I believe India are sort of... They seem to think it's like the final frontier for them to go and beat South Africa. So, I think that's going to be a pretty hotly contested series.
And as big Essex fans, we're used to things going down to the last session on the last day.
We are a little bit, yes. But you just can't, at the end of the day, you just can't fault the commitment of our Essex players, you know. They're absolutely wonderful, you know.
You're listening to 98 Out on Phoenix FM. It is a quarter to seven. I'm here till 7 o'clock, and then John Chubb is after me with the non-league hour. I'm here in the studio joined by Dan Haggart, Essex superfan. Dan, tell me about your love affair with Essex. Where did it all start?
Cricket started for me. I used to be full into football, used to be Ipswich Town season ticket holder, and literally just watched terrestrial TV cricket and my holidays or just having time off work. And one day Essex were playing India at Chelmsford in a tourist match in 2002. thought I'd go and have a quick little, go and have a look at it, you know, and came back the next year thinking, oh, this will be something all right to do in between football. And it just snowballed on and on, become a member, and literally just kept going back and gave up football. And you get to meet people, you're regular and you get to know people, you get, and that's how we've met there. Yep. Through it. And yeah, it's just literally snowballed on and on and on, and now I'm I've met all the players, and they're absolutely brilliant guys, you know.
That is a really important thing about County Cricket, which I don't think is spoken about enough, is the community feel that it brings. That when you go down to a county championship match and you sit with the members or whatever else, or even just regular people that come down to watch, don't have to be members, but you see people there quite regularly, you make good friendships. Yep. You find out who are the wrong ones quite easily as well.
I've certainly found a few of them, I know that.
I'm always fascinated by those that sit in front of the pavilion at Chelmsford with these huge autograph books. Yes. And pictures. And they're arguing with each other about, oh, I've got him and you haven't got him. And
well, I've even seen them even have the whole cricketers who's who, and literally going back years upon years, and they'll get this. It's a hobby. I mean, it's not something that I'd personally do, but it's just with me. I just go fully into things with me, and county cricket is just literally, yeah, I just do up and down country and everywhere as much as I can do with work, obviously work pendant, you know. Yeah. So
no, that's brilliant. And I'd rather have autograph hunters there at cricket than when you go to football. And we'll talk about this off air, just some of the behaviour you see at football, even at, you know, some of the sort of championship or, you know, lower league grounds. Yeah. Sometimes it's just not a pleasant place to be.
Well, I mean, the thing is, cricketers, especially on county cricket, are more accessible. You can actually ask a player who's fielding out right long out in the deep and the boundary, can I have your autograph, please? And they'll actually do it in between deliveries. They're actually technically actually playing, and they're stopping to sign, you know, to, you wouldn't get that, and obviously you won't get that, you know, in football, or, you know, even, I don't think even ask them on the sort of side, you have to wait till a certain time after or whatever to, or a certain area to go to specially for it, you know. It's not something that you just, it gets just done off the cuff sort of thing.
Yeah. And you've got a great relationship, and it's a long-standing relationship with a lot of the players at Essex as well.
Yes.
And you very kindly said a few words when Sir Alistair Cook announced his retirement. That was a big moment for Essex, I think.
It was. Alistair Cook was the last one of the original when I first went. When I first saw him, he was actually being used as a frontline spinner. He's actually been bowling off breaks, but he was an off break bowler. But yeah, it was it was a sad thing for me a little bit, because he was the last one of the original sort of people I knew, you know, the squad there.
Yeah.
Who then retired, it's like I say, I've grown, and let's say it's just being there regularly, supporting them. And you just, your face will get, you know, noticed, you know. And and like I say, if you back them to the hilt, you know, they'll always be good to you, you know. And I can't thank him enough for how good they've been to me.
No, they're fantastic. And you mentioned that your first game was back there in 2002, that India game. I remember that game really, really well. I mean, we talked about Sir Alistair. Yes. That was where he kind of announced his arrival, really, with a big innings, wasn't it? 200 or so?
200 against the Aussies in 2005. And in some ways, I think what it done, because they were then preparing for the last test match at the Oval at the time, where they were 2-1 down, and they need to win to try. And I think basically what sort of Alistair Cook done, and Ravi Papara as well, he got 150 in that, I believe.
Yeah.
Is basically chuck a spanner in the Aussies' works to try, you know. I don't think the Aussies sort of thought they'd just they'd get basically ran round the field all day. They thought, oh, we'll just whip them off and get batting practice, and you know. But yeah, I think it sort of chucked the spanner in the works of the Aussies a little bit.
Yeah,
their preparation. Yeah,
actually, I'm getting mixed up. It was 2005. You're right, where Cookie and Ravi got those runs. 2002. Am I right? Was where they tried to sneak Sachin Tendulkar into
the back of the Essex kit van, I believe. Yeah, I've heard of live loads in on wagons, you know. But
it's funny, isn't it? How much has changed? Because, you know, in the old days, players would arrive in buses with the England test team written down the side, or, you know, even the luggage van. I remember seeing, I think it was in that film Fire in Babylon, which was showing about the West Indies in England in 76 and 80. And there was a big transit Luton van, which was basically carrying all the kit. And it said down the side, West Indies kit van.
You know? I mean, I think they sort of opt for just sort of more of a plainer sort of van nowadays. I don't think it's advertised so much, but...
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I was talking about this to someone recently about... and players used to get sponsored cars from local dealerships, and I can remember Gucci and Keith Fletcher parking their cars at the back of the pavilion at Chelmsford back in the day with the, you know, Graham Gooch drives a Toyota supplied by County Motor Works, blah, blah, and it's in huge letters down. Can you imagine that today?
So it sort of draws attention, shall we say, you know.
But cricket was a different world in those days, and I thought players would have to make money wherever they could. And society was a bit more polite as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was. So Essex now, we've had the new... It's been a big year for Essex with this accusations hanging over for, well, more than a year now. It's been going on for ages. But finally, we got the Newton report, which came out. Both you and I were at the AGM, which I thought was a very impressive performance by CEO, chairman, and indeed treasurer. I thought Neil Faraday did very well. Hopefully now we can turn a corner. There's still the ECB report to come, which is probably going to have sanctions of some sort. Yep. We don't know yet, but it could be points deduction. It could be another fine. But on the field, Essex have continued... probably for a good 6-7 year run now, continued to delight the fans and bring in results and trophies that, you know, belie their sort of lowly status.
Well, we do, let's just say, we punch above our weight. We're the best non-test match county around. Yes, I have to say, since what has been happening off the field came out, I believe the players and the coaching staff, they've just stuck to the job, and they've held the ship together in some cases,
yeah,
I believe.
Yeah, they have.
And they've just stuck to it, concentrated on the cricket. And, okay, you know, yes, we all want to win trophies every single year, but I think some people have to just rein it in a little bit and just think, so long as we stay in Div 1, that's the main thing. And so long as we're competitive, that is the main thing. Because if we end up in Div 2, and possibly from a points deduction as well, we could be in trouble a little bit.
Yeah, that's right. And the financial situation is quite precarious. I think £700,000 in debt as of the last financial year. I mean, obviously a lot of that's taken up by legal fees and the rest of it. But, you know, the sponsors have hung in there. And I think John Stevenson's done a great job of reassuring them of the club's financial strength. So, yes, it is important, as you say, to stay in Division 1 and to sort of keep hold of players. And you know, they will get through this period. I think definitely the worst is over. I think, you know, that's all out there.
I think now the report has finally come out. We know what we now know what we're dealing with, shall we say.
So this time last year, if I just said to you, right, in 2023, Essex are going to be losing finalists of the T20 Blast. They're going to be runners-up in the Championship. You'd have snapped my arm off, wouldn't you?
I mean, previous year they were fourth in the Championship, quarter-final of the T20. And didn't get through from the group stage to the 50 over. But, I'd have been... I was at finals day at Edgbaston, and... we certainly weren't right. We beat the champions to get to the final, and really it was a game of fine. It was fine margins. If one or two possibly would have hung around a little bit more to support Dan Sams, he could have won it by himself. He could have just literally won it by himself.
Yeah.
And it literally. I remember that. I remember seeing Harmy after. You know, and he was gutted.
Yeah.
He was absolutely gutted when. When they were sort of looking at watching Somerset lift it, absolutely they've, you know, and they go, and the thing is they've got the ability in 4-day cricket to go on these runs, under, you know, these winning runs, and we have a squad that, I mean, especially our bowling attack yet again, it's got the ability to absolutely run through a side.
Oh, big time!
Especially, well, one guy can do it by himself in some cases, and that's Simon Harmer.
We've got a minute left. My final question to you is, what are your hopes for 2024 with Essex?
Basically, to still be competitive in Div 1, and hopefully we can go one stage further, we can get to that finals day again. I've already got my ticket. I got my ticket straight after this year's final. So, but yeah, if we can do it, and we're having Dan Sams back again, so if we can do it again, yeah, I'll be. But yes, just generally, we still be competitive, and our youngsters kick on, and so, like I say, as long as we stay competitive, then I'm happy.
There you go. Fingers crossed. Dan, many thanks for joining me in the studio tonight. Also, thanks to Roland Butcher. Keep it tuned to Phoenix. John Chubb is up next with the Non-League Hour. I'm back again next Thursday. Relentless with 98. Not out next Thursday at 6 o'clock. And if you miss me that much, catch me on New Year's Day at 8 p.m. Playing us out this evening, it's the Pet Shop Boys and Rent. I'll catch you next week.